Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.
You can't beat the sound of a contented cat. That's why veterinary surgeon and natural pet food pioneer John Burns developed Burns Pet Nutrition. Because he knows the positive impact a natural diet has on our beloved pets. And our premium cat food is designed to satisfy even the most finicky eaters. For natural, no nasty, wholesome recipes, choose Burns Pet Nutrition. Available from veterinary clinics and all good pet shops across Ireland.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Crime World is brought to you in association with Manscaped, who provide an incredible, complete men's grooming experience. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools and is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. We have an exclusive offer for Crime World listeners, 20% off and free shipping with the code CRIMEWORLD at manscaped.com.
There was only a small group of people left in Dublin City that Daniel Keenan and his organisation could trust. They did understand that it was an unsustainable level of violence, and they wanted, I think, a couple of trophy kills to bring the feud to an end, to go back to business as normal. If Patsy Hutchins is killed, the feud ends. This was the thing that they wanted.
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you're listening to Crime World, a podcast about criminals, drugs, and the sins of the underworld in Ireland and across the globe. It was planned as the Kinahan Mafia's trophy kill, with only the most trusted circle of lieutenants of mob bosses Daniel Kinahan and Thomas Bomber Kavanagh privy to the plans. But in an incredible turn of events, the 2017 plot to assassinate Hutch target James Mago Gately at his Newry apartment became the undoing of the most powerful crime gang in Ireland. Last week, criminal Douglas Glynn became the fifth man convicted in relation to the foiled plot to kill. And today, I'm talking to Sunday World Deputy Editor Niall Donald about the seminal moment in the state's fight against the powerful Kinahan mob. This is Crime World Extra, a podcast from sundayworld.com. ...2016 had certainly been the bloodiest year of the feud, and by April 2017, I suppose it's safe to say that the Kinahan mob were looking for a trophy kill. You know, they had obviously been attacked in the Regency Hotel where David Byrne was murdered. They had retaliated with the killings of Eddie Hutch Sr., Noel Duggan, Martin O'Rourke, Michael Barr, Gareth Hutch, David Douglas, Trevor O'Neill and Noel Duckegg Kerwin. Others had escaped assassination attempts, but really they were desperate for a head on a plate. And James Mago Gately and Patsy Hutch were the two main targets.
So they had, after the initial wave of killings following the Regency Hotel, the Kinahan organisation had obviously taken out a number of people, but there had been a sense that their prime targets had escaped their clutches. And the two people that they repeatedly focused on were James Mago Gately and Patsy Hutch, who they poured endless resources into targeting them. They were the number one target. We've heard in court that the Kinahan organised crime group had a particular focus on James Mago Gately, and he'd been obviously been shot almost miraculously escaping with his life despite being shot at very close range in North Dublin in a service station, probably only survived because he was wearing a bulletproof vest. But Michael Gately had left Dublin on an almost permanent basis, though he was moving in and out of it, in and out of the city. But the Keenahan organised crime group become aware of an address he was staying in north of Ireland, and that was the focus of this plot.
So what's emerged really over the last few years in these court cases that have ensued is really that the paranoia levels of the Keenahan mob at that point were at their height. The guards were getting a handle on the crime group. They were being targeted by all the forces of the state, by the Criminal Assets Bureau, and the Drugs and Organised Crime Bureau were very active against them. But this seems to be this April of 2017 planned hit on Gately seems to have been the coming together of the senior lieutenants. It appears that none of these foot soldiers that we've spoken about before, these hired, you know, drug addicts, people who owed debts and various people who could be bought for any of these hits, they were sort of excluded from this. And it seems that it was the tight inner circle. Now, last week, Douglas Glynn, who has never been named before as a member of the Keenahan organisation, he pleaded guilty to his role in this attempted murder. And he, at that time, was a really significant figure, wasn't he?
Absolutely. You know, there'd been a certain amount of maybe low-hanging fruit that had been picked off in the early days of the feud. You'd also had some of the other core gang members that had been forced to flee the country after coming under police attention. Or also, obviously, there was the threat of reprisals from the Hutch gang as well had led to some people leaving the country. So what was left at this point was there was only a small group of people left in Dublin City that Daniel Keenahan and his organisation could trust, and they were aware then at this point that the level of surveillance from the Gardaí and from their rivals in that part of the city was increasing. And so the circle got narrower and narrower, and Douglas Glynn was one of the last people left that the Keenahan organisation had that implicit trust built up over many, many years. And again, you know, although they're always described as being the one organisation, the Byrne Organised Crime Group, you know, operated effectively as a separate franchise within the group, but they had come together, you know, in a kind of a cell structure of a very small group of top-level people. And as we saw in the case of Patsy Hutch, ultimately they were hiring people, you know, to carry out operations. But there was a small crew, and there was that kind of cell structure mentality where only a small number of people deal with the top, and nobody else knows what's going on.
So Gately was identified as living in Newry, and like the people who were involved in this, hands-on involved, were not people who before would have taken that sort of hands-on role. They would always have stood back a little bit and let others take the high risks that these assassination attempts are very, very risky kind of crimes.
Yeah, they are. But, you know, it's interesting that although they did, they were... So, you know, you see Douglas Glynn and Padraig Keating has previously been convicted of a similar offence regarding...
And just remind us who he is exactly.
Well, Padraig Keating would have been from West Dublin. He was very much a lieutenant of Thomas Bomber Kavanagh. Again, like Glynn, he would have not been in and out of the papers every week. He wasn't one of the young Fat Freddy guys putting up stuff on Bebo over the years. Very much, you know, in one sense underground, but they were really the top level operatives in these organised crime groups. And Padraig Keating, similarly to Glynn, came before the courts, the Special Criminal Court, on, you know, these new charges, as we've always described. Like I'll even just read out what Glynn has been done for. I mean, it's just a complicated series of words in a way, but he's pled guilty to participating in the activities of a criminal organisation. And the specifics of the charge are that he had knowledge of a criminal organisation and with the intent of enhancing the ability of the said criminalised organisation to commit a serious offence, namely the murder of James Gately. So although these guys, you know, have now come before the courts, have now been convicted, in Padraig Keating's case, he is serving a long period sentence in prison, and Douglas Glynn will come before the courts for sentencing. But, you know, their charges really involve the logistics around it. The placing of a tracker device, to the surveillance of Michael Gately. And really, if you think back on it, Nicola, like, there's very few people that have been convicted of those sort of crimes before this new wave of charges that have come before the Special Criminal Court. So, you know, they were intimately involved in the actual operation, but they were still holding one step back in terms of, you know, they obviously weren't carrying out any shootings or anything like that. So maybe they felt, because people who carry out those crimes in the past have not become before the courts, that they had enough distance. But they were certainly, they certainly doubt that that seems to have changed now with these new laws that were totally ignored before and have now, now are coming before the criminal courts.
And, like, I suppose we can't ignore the fact that they did this, or they planned this as well, because of the pressure coming from on high. And there's no doubt, but the Kinahan organisation were absolutely very hungry to kill a key target. A lot of the victims, and not to take from their deaths and the importance of each one of these murders, but a lot of them would have been seen as not the actual key targets that they wanted to get. There had been, within that list that I read out at the beginning, two of those people were actually completely innocent and had nothing to do with organised crime. They were shot by mistake.
Absolutely. And if you remember, there was, around this time, I think there was two things going on that they did understand the broader Kinahan organised crime group, that it was an unsustainable level of violence, and they wanted, I think, a couple of trophy kills to bring the feud to an end, to go back to business as normal. Obviously, there was graffiti going up, if you remember, around this time. If Patsy Hutch is killed, the feud ends. So they were putting out this was the thing that they wanted. They wanted to...
This narrative, really.
This narrative that they... And they wanted to be the winners, I suppose, you know, sick as that may seem, that if they get these couple of targets, that'll be the end of it.
Yeah, and so they could move on and be back to business then.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And, you know, that they could make some sort of peace deal, if, for want of a better word. But, you know, Michael Gately certainly proved elusive and hard to get.
Well, now, that April, Imre Arrakis enters the stage, and he is known as an international hitman. I mean, he's such an unusual character. Like, he is known and was known as an international hitman at that point. He was living down in Spain. He was part of a big Eastern European criminal grouping, and he was a hitman for hire. There was a suggestion during his court case that he actually owed 100,000, or he was to be paid that, and it was kind of to write off some debt he had.
Yeah, I mean, I remember him being arrested and, you know, the word on the street, all of a sudden, a guy nicknamed the Butcher, I think it was being said, some Eastern European guy in his 50s that looks like James Bond, has been arrested after being flown over by the Kinahan organisation to carry out a murder. Just sounded too bizarre to be true, you know? But he...
Yeah, sometimes you'd be telling these stories, yeah, and you just know everyone is going, oh my God, what is she talking about?
Yeah, it sounds...
Dreams, reality. Yeah.
So, I mean, he, like... Arrakis obviously was part of one of these Balkan organized groups based in the Balkans areas, who are heavily involved in drug smuggling throughout Europe. Probably amongst the most serious and successful cartels. He's an interesting character and has, you know, he was a celebrity criminal in his own right, in his own
Facebook site, and he'd done interviews
and posed for pictures, and he'd been involved in prison in his native land and all of that. So, But he obviously seems to have hooked up with the Kinnans in Spain, where a lot of the Balkans criminals also migrated at that point, and was hired to come over. But yeah, it was this. I think that at that point there was a recognition that the guys on the ground that had been doing the dirty work for years were now, you know, very much under the guards knew what they were doing. There were some of them weren't available, and so they took this extreme step of flying over, basically a Bond villain.
Now, what they didn't realise, and I suppose they underestimated the international cooperation at that point between the guards and their international partners, and they thought that Arrakis was going to be able to land in Dublin Airport. He actually had with him some fishing gear and a rucksack, and that he was going to blend in and be able to make his way into the city centre. They had, I think Douglas Glynn's role was that he had placed a tracking device at this point on Mago Gately's car in Newry, and was caught on CCTV later. Evidence would be placed before the courts in relation to that. But Arrakis landed in Dublin Airport, collected his bag off the plane, and walked out and hopped on a bus into the city centre. But at this point, the guards had been tipped off who he was and that he was here to do something. I don't know whether they actually had details at that point. They knew he was here to attempt some hits on the Kinahan targets, the Hutch crew, and he was followed. And an undercover officer got on the bus with him, made his way into town, and watched him as he walked up around the north inner city. He took a little look at Patsy Hutch's house. He went up around the corner there where Gareth Hutch had been killed the previous year, and he viewed that area. And then he went and bought himself a wig and a couple of other little items in a shop, and was picked up by a man later identified as Stephen Fowler, and brought out to Blakestown Cottages, where he was going to have a sleep before he got up for his mission to kill, to head to Newry the following day. But, and we do have to recognise that the timing is just so skilled for officers to make their move and their arrest. And in this case, it was just down to a fine art.
Absolutely. And if you think of the prosecutions and arrests that have flown from that operation, you know, it's had an incredibly negative impact on the ability of the cartel to operate in Dublin, the amount of people that have, you know, ended up before the courts subsequently. Arrakis also had an encrypted phone sent with him, in which he was communicating directly with people at the very top of the Kinnan organised crime group. But the guards certainly, they were one step ahead in this case, where you might say at the start of the feud that the guards seemed to be two steps behind them as they operated. At this point, through intelligence, through modern surveillance, just through putting resources in it, they were way, way ahead. They allowed the plot to unfold to an extent that they could amass these convictions and arrests, but nobody was ever in danger really of being killed because they knew where he was at all times.
And they let him sleep the night, as far as I can recall, in Blakestown Cottages, and they waited until the following morning, and clearly for these, knowing that there was communication going on, we'd hear in court later that there were screenshots taken from his encrypted phone before it deleted. It was found on a couch beside him. There had been a bed laid out in the sitting room for him, and he had just woken up that morning when the guards burst in, and they picked up the encrypted phone, which of course these things can delete, and you know, anything is just gone from them. There's no way of getting back the messages. But one of the officers photographed the phone, and they were able to then use those messages. That there were four usernames on it. One was Ow New Knife, Bond 4 and Bond New. And my understanding is that the guards believe that Knife was a name used by Sean McGovern, who was in Dubai at this point with Kinahan. And Bon was a handle that previously had been used by Daniel Kinahan himself. So the belief is that this communication was coming directly from Dubai. And it was instructions about Gately. It was a photograph of him taken from Google. And it was Arrakis basically giving his opinion before he went up to Nuri that he was going to be able to take him out as he came out of the apartment block. He was going to be able to, he was describing the gun and how he was going to shoot him basically as he came out the door.
Yeah, you see, obviously now at this stage in 2021, the encrypted phones have proven, and everybody knows, have proven to be the undoing of many of the criminals across the world. But this is the first time, obviously, at this point, they were operating completely in the belief that they were untouchable on these encrypted devices. They were obviously texting, making calls, organising plots, and really felt that they were absolutely untouchable. But it's a stroke of quick thinking, I think, from a Garda officer, to take screenshots of these messages that have really given a great insight into how these things were done and planned and put into operation.
So now, Imre Arrakis, I think the arrest of him, shockwaves were felt across Europe. He was also wanted in Lithuania for a murder there of a partner of a celebrity singer, actually. But that would have to wait. He was taken into custody here in Ireland and he was jailed by the Special Criminal Court for 6 years in December 2018. He admitted to conspiring with others to murder Gately between April 3rd and 4th of 2017. And he will be extradited to Lithuania to face those further murder charges when he finishes his sentence here. But obviously, Stephen Fowler, whose house he was staying in, he was he was jailed as well for providing logistical support to the plot to murder Gately. But the big prizes for the Gardaí, I think, were Padraig Keating and Douglas Glynn, who pleaded last week and will be sentenced over the coming months. So, I mean, this was a seminal moment. It was the turning point where the guards really started winning, making big wins against the Kinahan organisation. And I'm sure, in Dubai, it was, there's no doubt, but it had to have been a worrying time that there could have been evidence there that would later be used against even more senior members of the group.
Absolutely. And you see Douglas Glynn, from the North Inner City, where at this point in time, it was really the last stronghold of the core Kinahan organised crime group, which was around the Hardwick Street area. These people had grown up together, people like Ross Browning, who's currently in facing a legal battle with the Criminal Assets Bureau. People like Gary Finnegan, who's a long-term associate of Daniel. They had controlled this area of the North Inner City. It was a place where they felt comfortable. They knew everybody what was going on. There was a franchise area where their associates sold drugs in that area. And that was really kind of a last stronghold. Mm. And this operation and including the ultimate conviction of Douglas Glynn, really, again, weakened the ability of them to control parts of Dublin. And similarly with Keating, who was, over and back to Thomas Bomber Kavanagh over in Birmingham. He controlled a crew in the west of Dublin that had been a very lucrative drug-dealing operation that was controlled directly by Thomas Bomber Kavanagh. And these were two people that were trusted, low-key, intelligent people that had the ability to plan and to function as normal, within a society. And it was a huge blow.
I suppose, really, for those who don't know Dublin, that Hardwick Street area was I mean, they were breathing down one another's necks. That's what has always been described. This feud was so, so violent and vicious because they were all living on top of one another. It was one gang who fell out. And Hardwick Street is really only a stone's throw from the North Inner City, which is the Hutch stronghold. And they'd have had both sides, which they emerged as, would have had associates in the areas. But I think it has always been claimed that the Kinahan money flooded into the Hardwick Street area, and there was a lot of young people there who were being paid retainers to work as spotters and informants.
Absolutely. And you see, obviously, you know, Gary Hutch, whose murder, I suppose, sparked the outbreak of violence in the feud. He would have grown up with people in that area, in the Hardwick Street. He would have been part of an associate of Ross Browning as teenagers. But as things split, that area, I think, stayed Kinahan loyal, where other parts of the North Inner City were very much Hutch family areas. So it was a huge blow, and it, you know, the grip that Daniel Keenan had on Dublin's underworld has been gradually eroded to the point in which for people like that to operate, they need really people that they trust, people that they believe, that they aren't feared their informers or they're disloyal. And as that grip has weakened, you have seen the impact on that on the criminal underworld.
And finally, I suppose, even though this plot came undone, Imre Arrakis's arrest in Dublin was a huge embarrassment to the Kinahan organisation internationally. It just shows, really, there's been descriptions of this being like a cancer or like a weed that, you know, you cannot take your eye off it, or it continues to grow. I mean, for me, the fact that a month later there was another attempt on Gately's life. He survived being shot that time 5 times as he sat in his car at the Topaz petrol station on the Clonshock Road. And in February of this year, Caelan Smith, who's a 30-year-old from County Meath, at an address in County Meath, was sentenced to 20 years at the Special Criminal Court for that attempted murder. Smith would not have been inner circle. He would have been hired help, as we call them. And, you know, he was obviously their last port of call, having missed this opportunity in Newry. Incredibly, Gately continues to sometimes come back to Dublin and
he's wandered around. Well, he's been obviously we've seen a huge number of the alleged Hutch gang members coming before the courts now as well, but Michael Gately has survived both the police and his rivals, and of course we had a picture of him enjoying a coffee in Dublin during the summer, looking as if he hasn't a care in the world, as we said.
The ultimate cat with 9 lives.
Yeah.
Niall Donald, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Nicola.
You've been listening to Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com, produced by Ian Mullaney and edited by me, Nicola Tallant. If you like the podcast and love true crime, why not download the free SundayWorld.com app for lots more stories from Ireland and across the globe.
Crime World is brought to you in association with Manscaped, who provide an incredible, complete men's grooming experience. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools and is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. We have an exclusive offer for Crime World listeners, 20% off and free shipping with the code CRIMEWORLD at manscaped.com.
Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on, Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.